I find that the thing I really enjoy the most, one of the things I enjoy the most about Dee Dee's work, and not just this piece, but seeing your work over time, is that it really leaves me with so much to think about for such a long period of time. Like, and that's why I count you as one of my favorite choreographers in the world. It's because it's not a there's a lot of meat there to chew on for a really long time. So you get a lot more than you get a lot for what you go for. You don't just get the hour and a half or the hour, whatever you're in the theater. You really get something that you can hang on to for a long time. And so one of the things that I really, this piece really made me think about was like how the resonance between in performance, the object of bodies and bodies as objects. And I think that, that there's such a, that proposes something about the audience and their experience of the work, which is something that is very important to me, that what is the object of bodies to be in a work and to view a work and to perceive a work. And I felt like each of the three parts really created a condition to reflect upon that in a different way. Mm. And in the same way, each of the three parts created conditions to reflect upon the idea of bodies as objects within the performance itself, whether those bodies are mediated through film or those bodies are mediated on the in nine bodies or in the dark part. And I just thought that was really super, because I think it's something that is really important to kind of new ways of thinking about dance right now and performance.
I totally agree. from an insider perspective, I think that the piece became increasingly about objecthood, and it's making me think of two things. But one, Dee Dee, had to do with something you said just a few nights ago, which was that you viewed the first part, you said, as a sacrifice of dance, which when you said that, it was at that party, when you said that, it kind of took me aback, because I hadn't heard you say that before, first of all, as a way of thinking about the nine bodies section. And at first, I was sort of resistant to that characterization, because the way that I first heard sacrifice implied a certain kind of violence. Mm. And that wasn't how I had experienced either the rehearsal process or the performance as these nine bodies. But the more I thought about it, it became interesting insofar as sacrifice implies a kind of exchange, simultaneous gain and loss. And so a sacrifice of dance, I started thinking, okay, well, what notion, if some notion of dance is being sacrificed in that first part, what is it? And then what's allowed to emerge in its place or in its stead? If it's not about, one thing that it seems not to be is about, I should back up, I'm kind of getting over, not about movement, maybe, or expressivity in typical ways. In thinking of what emerged, I think bodies emerge, in a centrally complex, where their affective potential is really full. I was thinking, my resistance to the violence at first, I was thinking about how when we first started trying to reveal body parts, you had tried, I think, in a lot of different ways to guard against a violent fragmentation of the body or a kind of deadly passivity, and also when the face became distracting and we started turning our faces away while showing parts of the body, you reminded us, and this happened once we were actually in the theater, that it's still Dee Dee, it's still Alejandra, it's still Danielle turning away, so that these were lively bodies that were being present in a kind of way. And it's not to say that these bodies aren't always in dance but maybe they're obscured. And then just this, a whole sequence of that first part was actually us trying to reproduce bodies, I mean reproduce objects, was where that sequence of, you know, once we start moving together came out of us trying to, and you were in your language, I'm not sure what this distinction means, but that we weren't being these objects, but we were trying to reproduce them. Mm-hmm. And for me, that experience or that act of trying to reproduce these objects raised exactly this question, Trajal, of what is the gap between my body as object? You know, how close can I get to this other thing? Where is the difference? And what's vital about that difference? Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm making sense. But so that object was present very early on in what we were trying to do. We were offering up, and I sent you that email, you know, mm-hmm. when we enter the theater, what does it mean to kind of offer these object bodies to be seen when we'd been working, you know, on this practice for so long in the studio? And then what does it mean that we are these object bodies in a cinema space?
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of people have been talking, or, you know, if not rigorously expressing emotions about the movie, and not so many people have been talking about the fact that you created a cinema space, which seems to demand or raise all kinds of, I think, interesting questions about relations between dance and cinema.
Mm-hmm.
The other interesting thing is that with all this talk about object and body, there is a critical moment in rehearsal because it's still a performance.
Mm-hmm.
And when you started... It is.
Yeah,
and when you started talking to the dancers about gaze and how to look, how to relate to one another, how to have their face in relationship to their own movements and objects and presentation, and then how they were going to connect with each other,
mm-hmm.
and with an audience or with the people that were watching them, that it completely transformed how, at least from the outside, it could taken in.
In ropes in particular, in that part,
in
everything.
Yeah, in everything, in the whole, that whole section. It's like once there was a communication between the nine bodies,
mm-hmm. yeah,
it completely, it's like something just ripped through it that made it, it came alive in a completely different way.
Yeah.
I thought that was a huge turning point in like hacking our way through the presentation of nine bodies.
Yeah, the work was really in us learning, like it wasn't a situation where I was teaching the performers something, but we were all trying to figure out what the technique was.
What was the discovery?
What
yeah.
is the thing that's, what's the strategy? We're like inventing it together, and that was, and yeah, when it got to the moment of this sort of very sensitive relational approach, it really changed it. Or it really grew. More came from it. That I couldn't produce that. Like, I couldn't produce it alone. I couldn't produce it alone. That's what I mean. One person couldn't produce that. It would have to be like a technique that people study together, and then from that, something arises.
It's funny that you all mentioned in connection to what you're saying when you're talking about the violence, because I feel like the movie really, and it's important that it was in the film and not in the live performance, but in a way, the movie addresses violence, or it addresses a certain level of confronting objects and objecthood in an aggressive manner. But it's interesting because the rest of the entire piece is completely sensual in a completely different way. And even in the movie, outside of its content, in its temporality, has the same sensuality. And I think the thing that worries me is that, or not worries me, but the thing that I'm concerned with as an artist, and is that I think audiences really come to perform us not expecting us to assault them. That they really, in a way, want to have their senses assaulted. So that when you provide a different set of conditions, it's immediately counterintuitive. It's immediately becomes counterintuitive
for the audience.
Yeah. And I think that goes back to what you were saying about this idea of trying to take the expression out, because when you do that, you're setting up a different set of conditions where maybe that assault is not present,
present in an anticipated way. Maybe it happens via unexpected passages.
Well, I actually think it's. I actually want to propose that it's not there. It is a different type of reception. It's a different type of feeling in the actual liveness of the piece. So that as you're experiencing, as you're experiencing this piece in time, a tension between the object of our bodies as audience members, in which we are constantly receiving things on a day-to-day level, and how a work of art can change the actual sensuality of how we experience the temperature, body, feeling, everything in the place. And I think that nothing is important. It's a very specific sensuality to that piece and that's why I think that what the content of the film by reverting back to that, the Santa, like, you know, like beating the imaginary, the things that we can't see, the invisible bodies in the chairs, the thing going back to the wood, it's trying to get us to, I don't know, for me, and I'm not talking about you, and I'm not talking about your intentions, I'm talking about the text of what I experience and how I reflect upon it, that it forces me to rethink that sensuality. And I think that it highlights for me how problematic that what as artists, the obstacles that we're really up against to try to create different, and I don't want to judge other objectives and other points of view and other ways, and that's why I want to even take assault out of it, because assault is a different kind of thing, or even assault can be great, like, you know, like sometimes you want to be that, but I think it's that it's become the prevalent way to communicate, and then when we try different ways to communicate, all of a sudden it's people don't know how to accept that conditions. It's almost like, you know, it's and I use sensuality very specifically because it's just like, you know, one could relate it to, you know, intimacy among people, you know what I mean? And how we sometimes enjoy, you know, different types of intimacy. But I think right now we're in a very crucial place in performance, because I think that many of us are not using the typical strategies where, okay, we have one could have a Zen performance, or one could have something where the audience immediately went to reflect upon the fact that, okay, I'm supposed to experience this in a certain way. I think that you're working, and a lot of people are working on a deeper philosophical level, that are trying to really to get us to rethink how we're experiencing life on a day-to-day level. And I think that that's something that your work always proposes, and I think that I guess my question becomes, what strategies, what are we going to use, what are we going to continue to do to try to, you know, acclimate our audiences, prepare our audiences and our culture for the kind of work that's really progressive and really has a lot to say. And I think that that's something that, beyond your piece, that's something that troubles me, and I'm constantly thinking about.
I feel like we have to do it in the work itself.
Yeah. But I don't know that the work is, but see, the work is, the problem though is that I think that most people, I'm a different kind of viewer. I'm much more interested in the experience I don't understand than the experience I understand in art. What I'm finding out throughout my life is that 98% of the people are much more interested in the experience they understand than the experience they don't understand. And there used to be this thing called a critical dialogue that was trying to you know, kind of change the ratio so that the stuff that people didn't understand had a chance to show. I mean, this is what Susan Sontag, I just read this thing where in the New York Times, I think it may have been today, where someone was talking about Susan Sontag and how she really made people. I mean, she had such a role as a cultural critic in her time, because part of, she felt her role was to really explain and bring people to this work and require them to understand. And I think we're really at a loss, not in the dance field in particular. I think there are a few people out there who are doing this kind of work, but in the culture as a whole, I think that it's kind of a gaping, you know, hole, as in HOLE.
Yeah. I guess you're right, because then when I think about when I have had conversations with people who've influenced me or proposed ways of seeing things that maybe were things that were to that point intuitive in me, but I hadn't sort of realized them, or saw their logic as opposed to just sort of felt their feeling. But when I started to have that kind of interaction with people and different thinkers or writers or artists, that really sort of projected me quickly into being able to articulate myself and being able to articulate my ideas to people I was working with and sort of people in general. So I would imagine that as an audience member or as a viewer of something, that type of interaction would also be useful.
I have a question that anybody could answer, or everybody could answer, and just tagging along on how Trajil's talking about the work, which I'm very grateful for. I was wondering if we could sort of, it's antithetical to what we're talking about, but sort of if we could pinpoint some of the instances or strategies or elements of the work that you identified as what makes it not easily understandable or readable, or more to what you were saying, what makes it really change, you know, the audience's expectation, really shift that expectation and put the audience at a loss about how to relate to the work.
Yeah, I mean, I would just, I mean, just to, because I think the fine points are really important in this to talk about. I don't think it's at a loss. I think that there's an assumption. I think there's a conditioning. There's a conditioning that happens that people, you know, before going to the specific, I think it's important to say, I think that if we think about art, what has happened that I mentioned this before, there used to be this feeling that in certain contexts, there was this art that was refined and that was rare, and that it could be for one person, and it could be, but there were people who brought us into it to say that this is important to look at, and that was deemed high art. Then that was critiqued for very important reasons, and there were also art that critiqued, there was pop art. But what has happened now that the field has been leveled, I think that now we're in a new place, because now, you know, anything can go. But in the fact that anything can go, I think that the commercial conditions have won out in many mediums. Yeah. But the object was not for the commercial conditions to win out, or for the commercial methodologies, or that we didn't want to see, we didn't want to see the rarefied, that was not the question, but what I felt was really important about those strategies and those critiques was that everything could be quote-unquote important, and everything could be looked at and things could be critiqued, and we want to really look at the context and the conditions of power which name things as being important to look at. But in the aftermath, what we've seen is that, of course, and of course this changes in various contents, again, the commercial conditions, those conditions which produce market value are the conditions which I believe have won out. And so that, for me, that is a problematic situation which we have to address. Like, how can we still be inclusive, and how can we still find, how can there still be conditions which we can propose as important to look at? So I think that, again, it's not that people are lost. It's like, okay, well, like some people could say that which is something I really disagree with, that Didi's the film is too long. I don't agree with this at all. I think that length is a strategy, that it is something that you have to, that one can experience it, and even your dislike of that is a great thing to feel in the theater. That's a great thing to feel in the theater. You can just sit there and, like, not know what to do. And I think that without that feeling, then the next part doesn't have its particularities, and that's what's being proposed. And so, but I find that what's problematic is that everything is supposed to have that thing, that everyone's supposed to get it. It's supposed to snap, pop, fizzle, and pop. You know, whatever that Rice Krispies thing is. You know what I mean? But that's what it is. And I think that, of course, I mean, I'm speaking very generally, and of course there is support out there for work, and there's so. That's just one example I can get just to answer your question specifically. We could talk about, people can say, well, why a film of that length in a performance, you know, and like, you know, and of course we've just articulated many things previously as to why this is interesting, why this is, you know, for those very reasons, you know. But I think that, and to me, that's part of what the piece proposes.
I just wanted to ask, just to kind of tail on that, Chaja, when you were talking about the, you know, this rarefied notion of art that's for one person, cinema played a huge role in this making art available to the masses, you know, and to you know, mechanical reproduction played a huge role in that. And I remember, Didi, you were reading Benjamin a lot at the beginning, you know, has written about that amazingly. And then also at one point you were talking about the smashing of the chairs, the fact that here we are, of all spaces, in a cinema space, you know, where there's a restricted audience. I mean, a lot of what you're talking about has to do with access. Mm-hmm. But that's part of the destruction, is these chairs that people buy in the cinema space. You know, if it's true that each of these conditions of the piece afford an opportunity to think about the body as object or objects as bodies, the fact that we have this particular media, cinema, and then live performance and presenting these bodies as objects within the space of the cinema, within this broader political context that Trajal's, you know, just kind of outlined, I think that might be another way to think about the stakes of things like the length and, you know, the duration, the time, those kinds of choices.
Well, and it's also it's very interesting, because I think if one goes back to, you know, the late 60s, early 70s, when the whole minimalist movement and thinking about Michael Fried, who was talking about objecthood and who was critiquing this work, he freaked out.
Theatricality.
Right. The term he uses is theatricality, and I would say that's what I would like to propose, that actually this length is about theatricality rather than what people want to think, that, oh, it's anti-theatrical, right. But actually it is theatricality, and you're experiencing theatricality.
We put a chandelier in a red curtain in the room.
Yeah.
we painted the little stage white.
But also, Didi, when you, I remember when you talked about the movie the first time, you were very radical saying, you know, the only thing that, the only material concrete thing that a person buys when they buy a ticket to go to the theater is a chair to sit on. Mm-hmm. So we're going to destroy the chair. Therefore, leaving out, the only thing left is maybe, I mean, I don't know the person that you just mentioned, and I don't know
Michael Creed.
Yeah, the quotation or anything, but for me, then everything else that you're leaving alive is the theatricality. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the experience, that's all you've got. And I think that you were very clear when you set out with the concept of a movie. There was like a really strong statement there. And it's interesting that it's kind of been lost by everybody. I mean, I don't think anybody
has picked up on it. Well, it's hard because people assume that the reason why I'm destroying the chairs is to punish them or something, because we all assume this position of somehow that the art is the authority, you know, and the art is the expert or something, mm-hmm, I guess. Yeah. Yeah. And what I really would, my ideal would be have like super comfortable cushions and a little bit more space, elbow room, or maybe we would have it planned in advance so that we could do several shows in one day, and the setup would be more conducive to have, you know, 30 people instead of 56 in
right,
the room, and
right,
have it be a gentler experience, but just no chairs.
So it's not a question of presenting an austere environment for an audience to enter and
or a challenging one.
Or
an anti-comfort or sensuality.
Yeah. That was such a big issue.
It was. And I think in retrospect, I think that was a weakness somehow of the piece, or, you know, that was a problem. That was problematic. My set design or the conditions of the theater somehow that I felt a little anxious about maximizing the number of audience I could see one show. So I crammed people in with thinking like, oh, I hope they know that they can relax and just like take it easy. But no, you know, you have to work a little harder apparently to help people with that, because it's a, you know, it is something to, I guess, sit on a cushion on a hard surface for an hour. But, I don't know. Is it or isn't it? I don't know. I don't know what it was that created that situation where some people interpreted it as a kind of attack. Like they should feel that the choreographer wants to make them uncomfortable, which is, I'm not even that interested in whether they cozy up and get comfortable. I would love to know that they did, but I just cared about the chairs.